You're listening to Now I've Heard Everything, conversations with the icons of our time.
Character is what makes a book memorable. It can have the best plot in the world, it can be thrilling, it can be this, it can be that, but what you walk away from and remember 10 years from now is that character beat touches you.
Best-selling author Dean Koontz, today on Now I've Heard Everything. I'm Bill Thompson. You know, most authors would be very, very happy if their books sold 500,000 copies. Many would be thrilled if their books sold 1 million or 2 million or 5 million or 10 million copies. Dean Koontz has sold 500 million copies of his books since his first one was published in 1968. A master of suspense thrillers with a little horror thrown in from time to time, Dean Koontz routinely appears on major bestseller lists. You probably have a copy of one of his books in your house right now. Maybe you have several. I've interviewed him several times over the years, including this 2004 conversation when his book Life Expectancy was published. It was a thriller, and what was terrifying about this thriller was how ordinary his protagonist was, except for the very deadly things that are about to happen to him. So here now from 2004, Dean Koontz.
Yeah, I really like Jimmy Talk in this book. I mean, I'm as kind of a biggish guy myself, I can empathize.
Yeah, he's well, as he says, he's biggish for his size, and meaning everybody seems to think he's bigger than he actually is, and he calls himself a lummox, but I think he eventually proves that he's not quite a lummox. He's not as clumsy as he pretends to be.
But he's a nice, friendly, easygoing kind of guy, which I guess prepares him very well for what lies in store for him in this book.
Well, I've always been of the conviction that character is what makes a book memorable, that it can have the best plot in the world, it can be thrilling, it can be this, it can be that, but if what you walk away from and remember 10 years from now is that character if he touches you. And for me, the more affecting and appealing a character is, the more memorable they are as well, unless, of course, they're a villain.
Well, Jimmy is no villain, although he does some very heroic things in this book, I must say. He is born with, well, I don't want to try to paraphrase you. Where does the plot take us in this book?
Well, the night Jimmy's born, his grandfather is dying from a stroke in the same hospital, and his grandfather has not been able to speak for a few days because of the stroke, and suddenly sits up in bed, begins to speak fluently, coherently, and urgently tells Jimmy's father that when Jimmy will be born, the minute, how much he'll weigh, how long he'll be, what his height is, and then he also predicts 5 terrible dates in Jimmy's future. And Jimmy is born at the minute his grandfather said. His weight and his height are what his grandfather said they would be, and so the family has to assume that those 5 terrible dates are actually going to come to pass, and the first will be when he's 20 years old. So from the time he's born until he's 20, Jimmy has to look forward to and anticipate someday in his this date in his 20th year when something terrible is going to happen. And so he's with a family, however, that deals with everything with humor, love, and a determination to be happy. And that's what gives him the strength to fight or to face what he's up against.
I was going to say, if this were like a Don Knotts character in The Ghost and Mr. Chicken, where the slightest little thing sets, I'd be a basket case knowing that this day is coming. But he just seems to think, oh, well, I'll just take precautions. It's, you know, it's almost like the code orange alert that the Homeland Security gives us. You know, something bad's going to happen, but just go about your daily business.
Well, you know, actually, a couple of reviews have said this book is one of the things it's about is how we go on living happy lives in the shadow of 9/11 and the expectation that it'll happen again. And I hadn't thought of it quite that way, but it really is in a way, because it's about, we all have terrible things happen in our lives, but we can get past them, we can cope with them, we move on, and there's a choice in life to be happy or not, and it is a choice, and I've always lived that way myself. You don't have to wait for other people to make you happy or win the lottery. Choose to be happy, and Jimmy and his family handle things that way.
The difference, though, with most of us is we fear that something bad will happen. Just, it's vague, but it may not happen. In Jimmy's case, especially after the first of these 5 days, he's really certain that something's going to happen.
Yep. He has no doubt about it, but first he says to himself, well, I know there's five bad days, so I'm not going to die until the fifth one, if at all. But then he realizes his grandmother suggests to him, you might not die, but you could have your legs cut off. Or she's a kind of interesting grandmother. And then he realizes that it might not even be something like that. He's so close to everyone in his family that it would be like dying himself if he lost a father prematurely or his mother. And so he begins to think, oh, it might not be me. It might be worse than being me. I might have a loss I can't cope with. But this is really a book about coping and about the mechanisms that we cope with, and he uses them all, and rather successfully.
Now, we should also point out that a central character or a central storyline to this book is the clown, this horrifying clown in chapter one.
Well, on the night Jimmy's born, there's only one other father in the expectant father's waiting lounge, and that is this clown in partial makeup. It's very funny, you know, you characters take over, stories take over. I was writing, and I came to the line that his father is bouncing back between the ICU where his father's dying and over to where Jimmy's going to be born. He's going between joy at a pending birth of a son and tragedy of losing his father, and so he's in a state of turmoil himself, and he goes into the expectant father's lounge, and I wrote the line something like, and the angry chain-smoking clown didn't help the ambiance. And I wrote that line, and I looked at it and said, what the hell am I doing? I didn't even know what that meant. But you trust your subconscious, and I thought, there's some reason I wrote clown and angry chain-smoking clown. I don't know where this is going, but as it turned out, it was something that I found, at least I found, to be wonderful and took the book places would certainly you could never have anticipated.
Conrad Bezo, this is the...
Conrad Bezo is the clown, and it's his real name. That's what Jimmy says. Boy, there is fate. I mean, this guy was destined to be a clown with the name Bezo.
But, you know, I didn't realize this until recently. Apparently, there are a fair number of people who really do have a terrible fear of clowns.
Harlequinophobia, the fear of clowns, yeah. I think all of us have in the back of our minds, no matter if we like circuses and clowns, a slight uneasiness about somebody who's hiding behind a happy face that's painted on. You know, you don't know what you're really dealing with behind that.
After this short break, Dean Koontz talks about the way he ends the book.
Start your day with Now I've Heard Everything.
We post new episodes every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at 5 o'clock a.m. Eastern Time.
Subscribe now so you'll have something fresh to listen to and get your day going.
Now back to my 2004 conversation with Dean Koontz.
Now, I don't want to give away too much of the story, but is there a difference between the kind of terror or dread that is kind of anonymous, like a plane falling out of the sky on you or things like that, and the kind of violence that comes from something more personal, where somebody or something is targeting you specifically?
Yes, that's both kinds can wipe you out.
But true.
The one that's a little harder to deal with is that one that's more personally directed. And in this story, though it appears in Jimmy, it first expects that these five terrible days are just going to be five terrible isolated things. But in the end, all of them tie back to that night he was born, to something that happened then, and in one way or another to this angry clown. So it becomes very personal as it goes on.
And sweet Laurie comes into his life.
Yes, he meets the woman of his dreams, and Jimmy is a very food-oriented guy because, as I said, his dad's a pastry chef, he's a pastry chef, and that's all he ever wanted to be. So when he sees his wife for the first time, into his mind comes this image of a living dessert, essentially.
And the first thing he realizes, she smells like lemons.
Yes. And he knows this is destiny.
But in her own way, as the book unfolds, she kind of brings Jimmy into his own, doesn't she?
Well, it's part and parcel. He's a man who's fortunate enough in his life to find the woman that's destined to be part of that, his wonderful family. He says about his family at one point, my family is eccentric, and I recognize that. And then he says, but also, so is yours, and so is everyone's. And in fact, every single one of us is eccentric. And what goes wrong with us is when we lose track of that, when we get so full of self-consideration and self-importance that we lose track, that we're just as eccentric and funny in our ways as the other people we look at and laugh about. And he meets a woman who has his same sense of humor and has her own eccentricities and just folds right into his family perfectly.
So does what you just said, does that hold true for the author's family as well? Do you have eccentricities in your own family?
Oh, I think it's true what Jimmy says. I think every family is eccentric in one way or another and has all of its... And I don't know that there's anybody... there's people I love dearly that certainly they are eccentric, and I'm not sure that I've ever known anyone who, if you get right down to it, doesn't have their quirks and their tics.
And it's your job to bring them all to us in a book.
Yeah, and to make you have fun recognizing these things about yourself.
That's right. I mean, Loretta, like I told you at the very outset, I mean, I saw me in Jimmy. I mean, not that I've ever gone through the kinds of trials and travails that he goes through in this book, but gosh, I mean, he reminds me of me.
Well, he's just an ordinary guy, you know.
Yeah, that's me.
he's a baker, and he wants just to lead a nice, simple, happy life. He's not expecting to be rich or famous, and he doesn't want any of that. And he just wants to have the kind of life that his family's prepared him for, which is a life of love and happiness. And I think most of us at heart, we'd be very happy to just live a life in which, it's nothing very eventful ever happens to us, and we're happy. That would be almost ideal. Of course, that's not going to be the life he lives.
No, that's true. That's true. Now, I don't even want to hint at what the ending of this book is, but it is a delicious twist at the end of this book. Did you know that was coming when you were writing?
You know, I didn't know. I almost don't know anything as it's coming. And then you look back and realize a part of you knew, the subconscious had to know, because you have prepared the way for it. It's lying right in there. And yet, consciously, you either didn't know or you hid it from yourself. It's kind of an amazing process.
It must have been very satisfying, though, I don't want to give away what you wrote, but it must have been very satisfying for you to realize that's how this book is going to end.
Oh, I recognized it before I got to the end, but it was probably, I recognized it when I had to get to the day where we won't give anything away in the prod, but where they have to go to the prison.
Mm-hmm.
And I had to sit down and think, now, why do they have to go to him? And I've set it up that they have to go to him and can go nowhere else. And suddenly I realized, oh, my God, now I know why. And it was kind of a wonderful moment.
Dean Kuntz will be 79 years old in July. Now, you can get a copy of Life Expectancy by Dean Kuntz by tapping the link in our show notes or by going to our website, heardeverything.com. Just look for the picture of the book jacket, tap on that, and you can take you right to Amazon. Now, we may earn an Amazon commission if you make a purchase. Now, while you're at heardeverything.com, be sure and listen to my interviews with two other very popular authors whose books are everywhere. My 2002 conversation with James Patterson.
I am doing a dance with the reader, and we're all in it together. They want to have a good time. I want them to have a good time. On my tombstone, I want it to be Jim kept a lot of people up late at night.
And my 1991 interview with Patricia Cornwell.
All of my plots are rooted usually in the commonplace and randomness. And that, of course, is what's so frightening, because we'd rather think it's a Dean Kuntz or Stephen King type monster out there who's very clever and supernatural. Somehow that would make us feel a little more immune if we knew it wasn't as commonplace as the person who pumps gas for you.
And we post new episodes of Now I've Heard Everything every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. And you can find us everywhere you listen to podcasts. And thank you so much for listening. Next time on Now I've Heard Everything, have you ever been fired? Well, of course you have. We all have. So next time we'll talk about it with someone who, like us, has been fired. My 2006 conversation with actress, writer, Annabelle Gurwitch.
Someone told me recently, Bill, someone said, my boss came in, he was an executive at a company, and said, guess what? You're becoming unexpectedly leisured.
That's next time on Now I've Heard Everything. I'm Bill Thompson.